Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, sports fans. You're online with Coach Penn, and this is Third and Long. This is a new show. Looks like it might be airing weekly. It's in conjunction with, WSB Talk continues to help them get some more airtime so they can broadcast games play-by-play, because women's football needs to get noticed if it's ever going to succeed. First off, let me start off by saying I'm Coach Penn. I was the head coach of the California Quake this year. We went 8-0 during the regular season. Got obliterated in the playoffs by Dallas, but it really wasn't Dallas. It was the Heat. But I'm really proud of my team and the season we had, and I'm glad to have some time off. For those of you who don't know me, let me fill you in on some stuff. I'm a lifelong football fan. I mean, I've been following some form of football since I can form a memory. I grew up in Florida, big Florida State fan. I ended up attending Florida State for college. Met some coaches there, got to hang out at film and study and go to their practices the last year I was there, and found out about women's football through my sister. For those of you who are familiar with the first year of the Quake, they won the championship in the WAFL in 2001, and my sister was an A-train. And I ended up traveling out to San Diego to see the championship game back in 2002, I think it was February 2002, and watch them take on the Dixie Blues, and it was too cool to watch all these women and their love for the game. And I joked around with some of the ladies saying, give me 6 months, let me get my master's degree, and I'll come out here and coach. Well, I got a call a couple weeks later from Esther Pichardo, who is now with Dallas, funny enough. She said that California Quake, some of the players from there wanted to start their own team, and they wanted me to come out and coach. So I thought about it for a couple days. I packed everything that I owned, threw it in a U-Haul, and moved all the way across country. I know every inch of I-10, if anybody wants to know how boring it is. Yes, and the Long Beach Aftershock was born, and I actually coached them for their four years of existence. That was a learning experience my first year, because it was my first year coaching anything. And to coach women was different, because, I've been on sports teams with men, and it was just a very profound experience to be coaching women and how they take direction and learn things differently. And it was unique, but I love it. And the main reason I love it is because these women love to play football. They don't play for fame or fortune. They play because they want to play football, and there's nothing else you can do more than that, just to be able to do something you love. Most of the guys I know, they can't play anymore, and so when you can't play, you teach, right? The last three seasons I spent with the California Quake. Previous two years I was offensive coordinator, and this year I finally got my first head coaching position, and learned a lot. We worked really hard to get where we were, and very proud of the team and the effort of the Quake this year. I mean, to go 8-0 was the first undefeated regular season ever. So that was pretty cool by all means. I was psyched to be the first one to lead them. I mean, even that championship year, they went 8-2 and then won three playoff games. But that's enough about me. If you have any questions, you can chat on the board if you're actually listening. If you look over by the profile, there's a little green square with a blinking, caption box, chat available. You can click over to the chat and type in some of your questions or make some comments, stuff you want to hear. I'm here. I got BJ helping me with the sirens, and she's going to be filling me in during the third part of the show, for any call-ins and predictions and stuff like that, because, it's the playoffs. Most exciting time of the year in women's football is playoffs, because all year we see blowouts and just uneven teams playing each other. And the playoffs is a way we get to watch really, really good teams play against each other. And, I enjoy it thoroughly. This is my fourth season in the playoffs. I did three with the Aftershock, and this is the first with a Quake. So I'm not really into the NWFA because I don't follow them because I don't have to play those teams. So this week I will not be reviewing any of those playoff games, so I look forward to hearing from anybody out there who has some info on them. I mean, I'm in the Southern California market, and we have the Amazons in the NWFA. Modesto folded. So basically it's just the Amazons. And I know Coach Duncan, and I've followed the Amazons, having played them for many times when we were the Aftershock. Watched them in SoCal last year, and I watched SoCal and Energy at the championship game last year. So I'm familiar with the teams, nothing against the teams. I just, you know, I tend to follow what league I am in. And right now I'm in the IWFL, and that's what I follow. I will be at the Amazon H-Town game this weekend, so hopefully next show I'll have some information on either H-Town or the Amazons, and can actually put forth some, I guess, educated knowledge on the teams playing, because I don't want to, you know, just speak off of the stats and what I actually hear. Right now, in the IWFL, we have two games on Saturday, and it's Pittsburgh at Chicago and Dallas at Seattle. Now, last week, or I guess it was 2 weeks ago, we had all the home teams winning in the playoffs. Chicago beat Detroit in last-second fashion. Dallas crushed us. Seattle crushed Corvallis. And then we had Pittsburgh dismantling Orlando. And so all the home teams took home victories. And this week, it's actually the big winner, Dallas, traveling all the way to Seattle. And then the other big winner, Pittsburgh, traveling all the way to Chicago. And I'm going to start with the Chicago-Pittsburgh game. I've actually been lucky enough to see a couple of the Pittsburgh games because I am from the East Coast, and my girlfriend is from the East Coast, and she's actually from Pittsburgh and has family there. So all their home games are televised. So we have had game tapes shipped to us from Pittsburgh, and we've actually been able to watch them, and it's been pretty fun seeing how the East Coast plays. You know, we were hoping to use that film for us when we made it to the championship game, but our season ended earlier than we wanted it to. All right, so after watching some of the Pittsburgh games, here are some of the things I've found out. This section of the show is called Scouting Report, because I will basically give you my scouting report on the teams and what they do and what I see their strengths and weaknesses. For Pittsburgh, you got to start at the quarterback with every team, because without a quarterback, it doesn't really matter how good the rest of your offense is. You got to be able to take that snap and have a leader underneath center to put the offense in the right formation and make the right call at the line of scrimmage if need be. Lisa Horton, number 14 for Pittsburgh. You know, her stats aren't anything spectacular, but then again, nobody's passing stats in this league are spectacular, with the exception of maybe New York, because they throw a ton. She's got a 45% completion rate for just under 700 yards. The big stat is 28 of her passes, 28 out of 37, have gone for either a first down or a TD. She's only thrown two interceptions, and on her stats, it says she's never been sacked, so that's saying something right there. She gets some protection. After watching some of the film, they do a lot of play action, and that's why she really doesn't get too much pressure. And when they do play action, it's usually some sort of boot or roll where they're pulling the center or guard and giving her some extra time. But she has got a rocket arm. She can sling it. And I was actually pretty impressed with how well she throws. She throws good on the run. And speaking of the run, she has 47 attempts this year for over 200 yards. I mean, that's over almost 5 yards a carry. I mean, she's gotten 14 first downs on those 47 carries, and she's actually scored four times. So, I mean, that's pretty darn good for a QB. So, and by what I was watching on film, they actually like to, you know, have designated plays and to where she rolls out and has the option to throw or run. She's very smart. Whenever it's a third and short, second and short, she makes sure to call that QB sneak, gets that first down, because it's all about moving the ball, controlling the clock, getting those first downs. So I was quite impressed with that. Well, when she is handing the ball off. She is looking to hand the ball off to number 12, Torina Henley, and Amanda Haig. Those are the two I saw get the ball a lot of the times, and based on the stats, those are the ones doing most of the damage. Torina Henley, not too much. She's averages about 73 yards a game, but a six-yard average. She is a physical runner. She doesn't try and beat you with shifty moves. She doesn't really have the shiftiness that I'm used to seeing playing Vegas and having a number five on our team. She gets to where she needs to be, and she out-physicals the tacklers. And I was very impressed with how hard she runs. And she's also smiling on the field a lot, and that's good to see because she's having fun out there. Amanda Haig, on the other hand, she's rushed the ball just half as much as Torina, and she's averaging almost 9 yards a carry. So basically I would say she's the burner, and the other one's the workhorse. Amanda has 8 TDs, to Torina has 6. So another thing I noticed is that a third of Lisa Horton's passes go to Lori Johnson, which seems to be her favorite receiver. She's caught 12 passes on the stats so far, and 4 of them for first downs, 7 for touchdowns. So that's when they need a first down, they're throwing it to number 84. When they get close to the end zone, make sure you cover 84 because that's who the ball is probably going to if it's play action. And they do a lot of play action rolling around the goal line because most teams here are, you know, run-focused teams. And if you can get defenses to jam the middle, that play action is going to suck everybody up, including the DBs, and you'll have tight ends and receivers running all over the field. On defense, they seem to be a defense by committee. After watching the film, I was just like I was so confused of what type of defense they're running. It looks like a 3-4, but it's not. It's more like a 3-5, which I've never seen. They walk up one of the linebackers usually here and there to do some blitzing. They tend to blitz a lot, and that's how they confuse offenses with the blitzes. But the New York game in particular, I was just watching that one earlier today, and New York was running all over them. Every time New York tried to throw the ball, they turned the ball over. It looks like they can be run on very well, but then, you know, they're 9-0, and not very many games have been close, so it's really weird. But the defense by committee, Tremaine Rogers, number 20, she's a linebacker. She's got a couple sacks this year, bunch of tackles. Who else stood out? Tia Montgomery, number 32. She hits hard. She got 2 interceptions on the year, 2 sacks as well, and 50-plus tackles. I noticed 32. 32 stuck out when you're watching the game film. 59 is another linebacker, Jennifer Dulski. She has 32 tackles, 3 sacks, and she's also got a pick, too. So let's see, who was the other one? Oh, Olivia Griswold, 86. This is the defensive tackle that lines up as is considered a D-end. She's got 43 tackles on the year, and a three-lineman set, for one of the D-tackles or D-ends to have 43 tackles throughout the year, that's pretty good. And she has 7 sacks to go with it and 5 pass deflections. Now, I don't know if she's dropping back into coverage or if those are just tips from the line of scrimmage, but that's impressive, 5 pass deflections for a defensive end. So those are the names and numbers you need to be looking out for when Pittsburgh has the ball and when they're on defense. Chicago, on the other hand, they're the only team out of the 4 teams I haven't seen film on. I was looking through their website, and they have lots of pictures, and I tried to gather what I could off of that. So basically this analysis is going to be based off their stats and what I could gather from their website. They look like they run the basic I formation, 2 receiver sets, whether it's twins to one side or a split end and a flanker. Their quarterback's number 15, Sammy Grisafi, and I apologize right now if I slaughter any names. I am by no means an English major, and you will not find me in the spelling bee anytime soon. One thing I noticed about Sammy is that she runs almost as much as Lisa Horton for Pittsburgh. She has 28 carries, averages 5 yards carry too. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. But on the year throwing, she's got 30 completions for 40% completion rate. She's only thrown two interceptions, but she's been sacked 7 times. So the fours haven't protected her as much as Pittsburgh has been protecting Lisa. And like I said, I haven't seen the film on them, so I'm not sure if they are just drop-back passes or play actions. Usually, Sammy is looking to give the ball to number 87, Melissa Smith. Melissa Smith has she's ran the ball a lot, 138 times this year for almost 17-plus attempts a game. She's averaging just under 5 yards a carry. Looks like they're a grinded-out team. They have a running back by committee force, and their main go-to is, and by what I read on the website, she's a rookie, Melissa Smith, number 87. Their other running back, Marcy Myers, number 42. She's got 40 attempts. She averages just above 5 yards an attempt. And then their big fullback, who they both follow, is number 38, Bridget Farner. She's got 38 attempts. She averages 5 yards a carry, but she would be the big bruising fullback that you need to take out first. If you can take her out, makes it easier to tackle the two scat backs behind her. Looking at the pictures, she looks like she knows how to get on a block. Let's see. The receivers that Sammy's looking for, number 17, Brandy Serta. Once again, I guess all QBs have their favorite receivers. A third of her passes went to Brandy here. She has 9 receptions on the year for 10 yards a catch. 6 first downs, 2 TDs. She's either catching a first down or a touchdown, just like her cohort on the other team, Pittsburgh. So looks like both quarterbacks have their favorite receivers, so I'm sure there's other receivers on each team, but shut them down, make somebody else step up. That's always my motto. Find the stars, the playmakers, shut them down, and see if anybody else is actually going to step up and play for the team. On the defensive end, we'll start right there at number 17 again, Brandy Serta. She is a DB or a safety, I'm not really sure, but I'll tell you this, she has 5 interceptions this year, and she took 1 back to the house, and she also returns punts. So she is a playmaker, offense, defense, and special teams for Chicago. Number 27, Linda Bosch. She's got 4 INTs, she returns punts, and she's caused 2 fumbles. So I would look out for her as well, 30 tackles to her name. Number 89, Jessica McPeak. She's got 3 sacks on the year, so 38 tackles, and she's 3 pass deflections in INT, and she's caused 32 yards and lost yardage. So that's pretty big right there. She's also, it looks like, a backup kicker and their punter. Chicago's weakness, special teams. By looking at their stats, I mean, she only averages 18 yards a punt, and she's actually had 1 blocked. So there, Pittsburgh, look out. Force them to punt, put some pressure on her, get a good return. Lastly, I have number 31, Pam Shafrath. Yeah. That I apologize for. Not a chance I was getting that. I think they call her Shaf. That's her nickname on the website. She's pulled in a couple sacks, and she has 56 tackles this year, a couple pass deflections, and an INT to her credit, too. So Chicago's, I guess, they're going to be a defensive team. And you got a defensive team versus an offensive team. And not to say that Pittsburgh is less of a defensive team, but they've had some points scored on them, whereas Chicago really, really hasn't. They've allowed, was it, the second least amount of points throughout the year. So that's pretty darn good right there. Let me see. 14-7 win, 18-7 win, 26-14 against Wisconsin Warriors, because there are 2 Wisconsins. Other than that, the highest they've allowed is 14. They've allowed 7 points 4 times, 4 shutouts on the year. So, I mean, they're a defensive team. The highest they've scored this year is 56 against Iowa Crush, and nothing bad against Iowa, but Iowa's given up a lot of points this year. They scored 40 on Clarksville, which is a Tier 2 team. And after barely beating Wisconsin in the opening game, 14-7, they woke up and played 42-7 the next time they played them. So it looks like their offense was waking up at the end of the season, and then they ran into Detroit first game of the playoffs, and shut out all game except for the last, 3 minutes of the game. I think they scored 3 minutes left. So that's a big win for them, and it proves that they know how to win in a close situation because a lot of their games were close. Pittsburgh, same thing. They've had a good year, but more importantly, they've played in some close games against some rough competition. I mean, they played the Sharks, the Divas twice. Let's see, who else did they play? Divas twice, who they won 38-34, and then 17-12, and they beat New York 28-21. So they've been in some nail-biters. They've basically blown everybody else out that they've played. But both teams have experience in close games, so when it comes to the playoffs, which Pittsburgh has plenty of experience with, they shouldn't get all frazzled, and they should know how to handle the situations. So that's my breakdown for those two teams right there. You got Pittsburgh Passion, defending champion of the NWFA, who just joined the IWFL this year, looking to spread their reign of terror across another league. They're doing a good job of it. East Coast, West Coast, I have no bias. I used to have an East Coast bias, and then I moved out to the West Coast, and I basically had to shed my East Coast bias, you know, because I'm a Celtics fan, and I live in L.A., and, you know, Lakers people will just shoot you for just wearing something green. So I like the speed that on the East Coast and how football is played on the East Coast. But after 7 years of coaching women's football, I'm proud to say I'm on the West Coast. We got some good teams out here. We play a different type of football. I see a lot of shotgun played by Pittsburgh and New York and Vegas. They play a shotgun type of offense, too. It's very fun to watch, very fun to watch. But I like that play action, let's run the ball down the throat, see what's going to happen kind of football. So let's see. Next game. This is the game I'm most interested in. That is Dallas at Seattle. All right, Dallas at Seattle. Let's think. Seattle has just shut everybody down they've played this year. They start off with number 10, Michelle Renee Volk. She's their quarterback. Her stats are very similar to that of the other two quarterbacks I compared so far. 35% completion rate, just over 400 yards. The one thing that stands out is she's thrown 11 interceptions to only 9 TDs. Now, the Corvallis game that I saw, I think it was the first one they played, I believe she threw 5 or 6 interceptions during that game, and I was just like, are you kidding me? How can they be undefeated or have won that game, and she threw 5 interceptions? So she does not run the ball, though. When they want to run the ball, they give the ball to number 3, Rachel Gore, and she is a shifty back. She knows how to run. She's got some good speed on her. She only has 4 TDs on the year, so that kind of surprises me. But then Seattle's not a scoring team. They only average 20-some points a game. They've been over 30 twice. They're a grinded-out team. They want to basically control the clock and control the field position. And that's how you win football games. That's how they are 9-0. But Rachel Grohr, number 3, she's got 670 yards on the year. She averages, you know, almost 6 yards a carry, 35 first downs. Let me say that again, 35 first downs to 4 TDs. That's amazing. I mean, she's getting a first down. How many games have we played? 9 games, and she has 35? That's pretty good right there. I know that Volk's favorite target is going to be her tight end. They like to hit that tight end crazy. I've watched a lot of film, and I knew that if we had to play them, we needed to cover that tight end. I believe number 6 or number 9. I can't remember which one. She plays both ways. I believe it's number 9. It's Adrian Wilson. She takes a lot of end-arounds, and they put that flanker in motion, and hand it off to her. She is just as fast as number three and just as shifty. So, I mean, that's something you got to be prepared for when playing Seattle. They do like to get you moving and trying to beat you on the corners. The exciting part about Seattle-Dallas is Dallas had the heat when they played us. I'm not so sure it's going to be that hot in Seattle, so Seattle will at least have home field advantage, which means their fans will be screaming loud, supporting them, and they'll be used to the weather, and they'll be somewhere comfortable. You know, they didn't have to travel. Dallas, last time that Dallas traveled was to Kansas City, and Kansas City lost 28-13. Their coaches admit as much to taking Kansas City lightly and not actually preparing as best for that game, but they I don't think they'll let that happen again. Seattle's biggest strength is their defense. I mean, their defense is really well. They run a 4-3 from what I've noticed through film, and the two people you have got to get blocked is Gretchen Petras and Heather Gallimore, or Gailmore. She actually, I just found out today, is the owner of the team. So, but she has 18 sacks on the year. 18 by one person. That's just crazy. The other D end has 5 sacks, and these two are fast. They are very, very fast off the line of scrimmage. So if you can't get them blocked, you are going to get sacked or at least slowed up in the backfield. And the way Dallas runs their offense, it's all about timing and the way they put people in motion. So if Gailmore and Petras can actually time those snaps, they will prevent a lot of the outside runs that Dallas likes to do. I mean, I've seen a lot of Dallas film, and what they do is very predictable. You just find 46. If 46 is somewhere, the ball's going to her, or it's going right behind her. It's very obvious what they're going to do. We did a good job stopping it when we could breathe, but that only lasted for like 5 minutes into the first and third quarters, and then our whole team was out of breath, suffering from heat exhaustion on the sidelines. So if you can actually time that snap and find where 46 is, they have a good shot of competing with them, and all a team needs is a chance. And though Dallas has blown everybody out, they can be beat just as easily as anybody else. Big thing with the scouting report on Dallas is that they are very good at blocking. They had a lot of holding calls called in the second half that weren't called in the first half against us, but they get to their blocks quick, and they move downfield and they keep their feet moving. They're a very well-disciplined team, and they know what they want to do, and it's so obvious from a defensive perspective what they're going to do is just, are you going to stop it? You know, and like I said, we stopped it when we were fresh, and then when we weren't fresh, we missed tackles, and there was lots of one play drives. Seattle, on the hand, they watching film on them, I just wasn't very impressed. They punt a lot, but they play field position. They try and get first downs, and that they try and put you in really bad field position. They've got a couple safeties this year. Actually, they have one, and that was in the Corvallis game. Dallas has 2 safeties this year. But the glaring stat for Dallas is that they average 9.8 yards a carry, and they led the league in yards per game, 242 rushing. They don't really throw the ball because they don't need to. So it's very funny to have watched them. Dallas is people to watch out for when they're on offense. The person running the game is Karen Seamers. She is very good at leading the offense. Her snap cadence and getting everybody in position, she's a very good team leader. She's only thrown the ball 42 times, completed 16 of them, I believe. Let's see, 14 of them have gone to Springer, so that should tell you something. Like I said, it's either going to her or going behind her. She's, you know, thrown one INT. She's only been sacked once. She does not run the ball. She will go and get a first down if it needs to be done on, you know, third or fourth and a yard or two. So she does that. But her main thing is to make sure everybody's in the right spot and get the ball to Springer. Springer, number 46. If you don't know, now you know. She is very, very good. She's strong and she's fast, and it's like she's clocked in. When she hops on the field, she just clocks in. She's not fancy. She just runs. If somebody gets in her way, she tries to run them over. She gets to the end zone. She just drops the ball, walks to the sideline. She's not flashy, and she doesn't showboat. She basically is a workhorse in women's football. She's only carried the ball 63 times this year, 18 of those for touchdowns. She averages almost 13 yards a carry. 9 of her runs have been over 20 yards. 6 of her catches have been over 20 yards. She plays a little defense, too, so you got to worry about her there. She's got 4 sacks in the year and 21 tackles, forced fumble. And here's the thing that really kills. She returns punts. They return too deep. Punt return, they put 2 people back there so that you're not chasing the ball all around the field. It makes you have to kick to one of them. Well, she's returned 3 punts for touchdowns this year. So Springer goes as Dallas wins. To me, the most important person on their team, though, is 82, Rachel May. She's their fullback. She's listed as a tight end on their website. Have no clue why. She's huge. She's basically like a house that walks. She's carried the ball 36 times this year, 13 first downs. So if they need 4 or 5 yards, they're just going to give it to her right up the middle. She averages almost 9 yards a carry, which is just crazy. She doesn't really get a lot of long runs because, they save that for Springer or Dessa or Q. But she's had 5 runs of over 20 yards this year. She hasn't actually – they haven't uploaded the stats from our game, and I'm kind of glad because I don't want to see them. But, yeah, she actually killed us. She was just right at the middle, killed. I mean, she's a very good lead blocker, too. She will destroy anybody trying to take her out. We did a good job of slowing her down, but once we got tired, we could not tackle her to save our life. She's just so big, and she has a very good center of gravity for somebody that big. I mean, I'm not talking short and stocky. I'm talking she is very tall and built. If Springer's not in the game, here are the 2 people you need to look out for. Number 3, Odessa Jenkins, and number 17, Q Ragsdale. Ragsdale has only played in 4 games this year because I think she hurt her knee and she just came back recently towards the end of the season. But Odessa Jenkins, number 3, she is a rookie by what I've been told. She plays wide receiver and running back, and the way they do it, they usually line up in some sort of trip set, whether it be spread out or a diamond formation in tight. And they put somebody in motion, and they're trying to get a sweep to the other side, following Rachel May. Odessa averages almost 14 yards a carry. She's carried it 19 times. sorry, I just reading the chat on here, and Boo's making fun of somebody that I called a house that walks. Yeah, she's carried the ball 19 times and has 5 touchdowns. She burned us a couple times. And she is fast, but she is the flashy one. She will celebrate and make you look stupid. She was very intimidating on the field, as in the fact that she lets you know that she knows she's all that. Q Ragsdale, I've actually faced her before because this isn't my first time playing Dallas when I was with the Aftershock. We played them a couple times, and this was during the 1 year we had a ton of rookies and all the veterans had retired, and they just ran all over us, and Q is fast. She's a tiny little girl, so she's a scat back, and you get a good lick on her. You could put her out for the rest of the game, but getting that lick on her is hard to do because she's so shifty in there. She averages a minuscule 7 yards a carry, and, like I said, she's only been in there 4 games, so she's only carried the ball 22 times, but, she's already got a TD, and she's had 3 runs over 20-plus yards. On defense, like I said, Springer. Springer's the one to look out for. They play a 3-4 defense. They rarely shift from it. If you get a couple first downs on them running, they will shift into a 4-3 defense, which is actually a 6-1 because they'll walk up those outside linebackers. And they also do that around goal line. Springer's an outside. She usually plays weak side. And then number 47, Jennifer Welter, who is very deceptive on film. She does not look as strong or as fast as she is in person. But she has 5 sacks in the year and 30 tackles. For a linebacker, an outside linebacker, she basically plays like an LT version of the Bear defense. She walks up on that tight end. She doesn't cover the tight end. She basically just bumps her and then goes after the quarterback or sits in a zone. But she's very strong and very fast. The person to highlight, circle, sprinkle dust on, whatever you need to do to remember her, Lakeisha Bowman, number 56. This is a monster. She is very good at disrupting things. Her stats show her as having 43 tackles. Well, tackles aren't everything in football. If you can scare the other team into jumping, false starting, missing a block, or saying, I don't want the ball, I don't want to get hit by her, that's pretty good. And she is very good at figuring out snap counts. All the films I've seen, by the second quarter, she's figured out the snap count, and she's timing it. So we tried to change up the snap count, but she didn't play that much defense against us. So I'm not sure she was getting punished or trying to recuperate from injuries, but she didn't play that much against us. And when she did, they put her, Springer, and some other person on the defensive line when the game was well out of hand. So we had a lot of fun trying to block basically the three biggest, fastest people they had. They never sacked us, but it was a challenge for our five to block just those three. Dallas on defense, they are weak in the secondary, and I'm not saying that 81, 24, 21, and 14 are weak. I'm saying that is the weakness that I see. They can be thrown upon. We were actually, I think, our backup quarterback was 4 of 9. Wheels had a pass for 20 yards. Cheeks had a pass for 20-some yards, and then our starting quarterback was 1 of 5. And if we could have hit some of those passes in the beginning of the game, it would have been a difference because those are first-down passes. We were trying to loosen them up. But every film I've seen, people have passed on them with ease. I mean, even the New Mexico Menace, even though the game was out of control, Dallas still had their starters in, and they were throwing ropes down the field, and they were barely missing wide-open people. So if you want to beat Dallas, you know, block them, and then complete short passes. You know, if you can keep them on the field and control that clock, you know, their offense can't get out there and score 70 points is what they're accustomed to. But, yeah, those are my two breakdowns of the IWSL playoff games. You got Pittsburgh at Chicago, and you got Dallas at Seattle. Now, all these teams are deserving of being in the playoffs, as were us and Corvallis and Orlando and then Detroit. Detroit, 7-1. I mean, there were some very good 6-2 teams that did not make the playoffs in the East. So congratulations on everybody that made the playoffs and those of you who lost last weekend, including us. You know, that's something to be proud of. You made it into the playoffs. So now it's up to these teams, and the winner of this goes on to Chicago to play for the championship. So, I mean, that's pretty cool, championship, right? You know, everybody, that's everybody's dream, is playing a championship game, have the chance to, you know, win a ring, get a ring, and, you know, flash it off, and you know what, you tell people the rest of your life, hey, I won a championship with football. I was able to do it in 2002 with the Long Beach Aftershock. We ended up winning, so I have my ring set aside. As long as I'm coaching, I won't wear it because I'm still coaching, and I want another ring. You know, it's all about what we have now. We can't be satisfied with that later. That's what you tell the stories when you're done. You say, hey, you want to see my ring? And they're like, what for? Oh, I can tell you the story of coaching women's football. But I mean, I love it out here. I think women's football is great. I think some things need to happen sooner rather than later. That's one of the reasons why I called the show Third and Long, because women's football has been around a couple times now, and you know, we got a long way to go before it makes it into the big time like the WNBA. So I called my show Third and Long, not just for the football reference, but because, you know, how many more chances is this sport going to get? I mean, there's so many women out there that dedicate so much time to sacrificing their bodies to play a sport they've been told their whole life they can't. So now they here they are, and the powers that be won't swallow egos and make it the best thing it can be. But that's a discussion for another time. Right now, I just wanted to break down the playoff games and then kind of give my listeners out there on my first show, boo, I hear you out there, a chance to input what they think about the playoffs this week. I mean, I think Coach Lee said he was going to be on. Heard from a couple other people, but Boo, if you've already called in, maybe somebody can unmute you and then see what you have to say out there. And then if I hear of some others, you know, feel free to put it out there. Boo, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Of course I can hear you.
Oh, excellent. They unmuted me already. That's good. Yeah, hey, Coach, I was just calling in. I wanted to listen to the premiere of your new show, and I wanted to call in and say a big congratulations to you and the team. The 2008 Quake, I know, worked very, very hard this year, and I was damn proud of every single one of you. I probably shouldn't cuss on air, should I? It was a very fun, inspirational, and, you know, pride-filled season to watch, and I'm sorry that you guys lost. You came up against Dallas, which we know is a really, really good team, but I am so proud of all of you, and you make an old lineman proud.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, it's glad to know that some of those old-school players, whether it be from, you know, the Quake or way back in the 70s and 80s, still follow, and it's just like, you know, I've known you since 2001 when I first started following it, and
right.
You know, you've always been a big supporter of women's football, and we appreciate your support, you know, coming from the California Quake. You're always the biggest fan. You know, you got your permission to be an official photographer of the IWFL this year, so you actually did a good job of being a photographer while you're there. When you wanted to watch a game, you said, you know what, I'm going to the stands. So we appreciated your support, whether it was on the sidelines taking pictures or in the stands losing your voice.
That one game, I think I lost like half my remaining hair on that one Vegas game at home. That was a nail biter to end all nail biters.
Yeah, well, we do what we can, you know. We got to put people in the stands, and the only way to do that is to put on a very good show.
Right.
And I think I lost even more hair that game, so I'm going to start not wearing visors anymore. I'm going to start putting a real hat on so people can't see the huge bald spot building from women's football.
What do you think I wear that cowboy hat for?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's your signature, so there you go.
Yeah, the truth comes out. So, I mean, you can put me back on mute, Coach, or if you want, we can.
What do you think about that? I know you just came back from vacation, so you don't even know what happened on it, you know, any of the stuff while you were gone.
I've been back for 2 days now and sort of catching up, and I heard about some of the stuff that's going on in the other league, how the Amazons are going to be playing their first game this weekend.
Their first game in like a month and a half or something like
that?
Yeah,
they haven't played in 6 weeks, and, you know,
are you
Kentucky
going?
Was... yeah, I'll be going.
I'll
in La Puente on Saturday, right?
Oh yeah, and I'll be up in La Puente at Bassett High School going, Duncan, what are you doing?
I tell you, the Amazons are the real deal this year from what I can tell, and I'm really interested to see that game against Houston because, you know, it depends on who you talk to. If the Cyclones are the energy or the Cyclones aren't the energy, I know they have some returning players. I know they have some rooks. And I don't know, but I'm expecting a really good game. I'm expecting Houston to come out and, you know, it's going to be a battle either way, and I'm not really sure who's going to pull this one out. And that's the sort of game I like to go see where I don't know who's going to win.
Well, see, the thing is, I mean, you and I have watched the Amazons for 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's changed in those 6 years? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely
they seem
nothing.
To me to have gotten a little bit faster. They have some good team speed. They always had good team speed, though.
They've always had good team speed.
A little
I think they're getting more experience, and that's what I've noticed is that they're actually starting to understand football a little bit better because a lot of the same people that were playing a long time ago are still playing, and they've gotten lots of new rookies. And from what, because I went to the SoCal game last year with them, and I was just like, are you kidding me? 6-7? And it just looked like both offenses were not taking advantage of what the defenses were getting. I'm not saying the defenses weren't great, but I mean, just like there was some very effective offensive ineptness going on there.
Right. Well, I remember the WPFL championship in San Diego last year was, again, sort of that same thing. The defenses played well, and the offenses just, you know, never really took advantage of what was presented to them.
Yeah, it was like the offenses were playing not to lose, and the defenses were playing their butts off.
Mm-hmm. And but you know what they say, defense wins games. So It's you know, if you can put up 14 and make that stand, that's just as good as putting up 40. So
No, and I get that. I understand that if it's a good defensive played game. Like, I bet you that that Chicago Detroit game was a defensive battle from top to bottom.
I would have loved to have seen that game.
But I don't the SoCal LA game from last year, it was not a defensive battle. It was basically which offense is going to score. And that's what I came off seeing. I mean, I'm glad that LA is scoring some points now because they've never been an offensive threat.
Right.
And the really thing that entices me to watch the game is the fact that Phoenix blew out everybody all last year. And then LA just blows them out. And I'm like, oh, see, now that is intriguing because which is the real team? You know,
right. Now, I know you weren't at that game, Coach. I was at that opening game for the
Nationals. No, because we were in Vegas.
No, that was when you were at SoCal. That was the 5-0 game.
At SoCal,
Right, and so that was my one opportunity to see the Amazons this year, to go see them live. And the thing that was different this year, Coach, is they had the fire in their eyes. They came out and they destroyed Phoenix in the first 3 minutes of that game. And took the heart out of them, and that's how they won that game. After that, it didn't matter what they did because they scored on the first two plays.
Well, by what I've heard and from the stats that I've looked at, LA is a running team.
They do not pass much.
They still can't throw the ball, and they just because I know I was it Deanna Guidry. She's 24, I think she's 24. She was I remember we played against her, or 21. I think it's 21. We played against her, and she's fast. But, I mean, Aftershock was a different world, and I saw some things on the message board these past weeks about, you know, you can't compare the 2001, 2002, 2003 teams against the 2007, 2008 teams because they played
ignore what's
better.
On the message
boards.
You know that.
Huh?
Ignore what's on the message boards.
Oh, I love reading them because it's great comedy. It's great comedy, people thinking they know what they're talking about and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm like, a lot of these people only follow their market. And
exactly.
And Sarge, I don't know what he does, but he researches a lot of the teams. So, you know, hey, anybody that's out there besides Boo, you know, if you have some questions or want to comment, you know, just pop in on the chat board and give out your last four digits, and we'll get you unmuted. You can ask me some questions if you like. You're on Third and Long with Coach Penn. But, yeah, I think a lot of people out there are just truly uninformed, and they're so biased on their own teams that they come off just sounding stupid. And I love reading the message boards just because it's fun.
It's hard to get information out there on teams other than the ones you can actually go see. And so I have a lot of sympathy for that because, you know, I've been following all the teams and all the leagues that I can find online for a number of years now. And, you know, teams aren't really good about posting their stats or, you know, giving the information.
That is the fault of the league.
Exactly. I mean, we could be doing so much better on this stuff.
Because I like the fact that the IDFL has all these stats, but then you have, like, 10 teams that don't report, and then there's no way – the sorting method is kind of a joke. I mean, I like the way the NWFA does their stats. It looks like all the teams have to report. They do report, and you can actually – hey, who's the league leader in this? Who's the league leader in that? And
right.
Even in that method,
there's a lot of question as to the accuracy of those stats. And, you know, because basically, you know, nobody's paid highly in any of the leagues, so you might have
to. I know I have to spend 3 hours taking those stats, so I make sure I do it right. And it's a hassle. I want my ladies to get recognition for what they did. And, you know, a couple of the players were like, you know, I checked my stats and something looks off. And I was just like, you know how much time and effort I spend on trying to get the stats right? If your stats are off, I'm sorry. I'm doing the best I can. And with the person videotaping, it's hard to actually get the whole play because sometimes you have to wait for the pile to undo. And if they've already pushed stop by then. So I'm like, you know, it's just the team's – the teams have so many needs, and I really want women's football to succeed because there's so much love out there for the ladies, and they're sacrificing so much, and I want the future generations to say, you know what? I remember back in the day when they actually had to pay money to get to places. And they had to do car washes to raise money so that they could have a jersey and stuff like that. It's just, you know, it seems like there's a lot of money in women's football. It's just it's ended up in a few pockets. That's it.
Well, you are preaching to the choir on this one, Coach, I'll tell you. So.
Oh, no. I know. I'm talking to everybody listening as well.
There you go.
I mean,
did we ever get anyone else on the line?
I guess nobody else
talking
wants to talk. I mean, she said there's a bunch of people listening, but I guess nobody actually wants to have their voice heard. So she said lots of listeners. Oh, that's scary. And I'm not sure I want to hear the results of this feedback, but only 5 people are in the chat room right now. So, but the show has got, 10 minutes left? I'm sure it'll beep at me or something when the show's almost over. But after watching some of the film, I cannot believe that the Pittsburgh Passion are on Fox Sports Net. That's amazing to me. For a team to be able to do something like that, they need to be able to say, hey, listen, you over there, talk to this person at this station, get it done for you. I mean, because that's all it takes. If we can get a couple more teams like that to have the, the bandwidth to market. I mean, some of the teams are really good at it. Dallas is a good one.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh case, they have an awesome team in a football crazy town, and they wouldn't be getting the kind of attention that they're getting now, I'm pretty convinced, if they weren't putting a good product on the field. But that's their advantage. They play good football. Yes.
Product on the field is a result of your competition.
Yes. Yes, yes, right. Yes, absolutely.
All right, and they've had a bunch of blowouts this year, too. And every year they've played, just like every team has either been blown out or have gotten blown out. I mean, the number of games that are actually close every year on one team's schedule is a couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rest of them are all blowouts, you know, and there's no parity in this league at all, and that's, as I started the show, I was like, that's why I love the playoffs, because we actually get to see some parity, you know, some good teams playing good teams, and it sucked for me, because we are just as good as Dallas. I don't care what the score says, we are just as good as Dallas. And,
I think people don't realize how improved the Quake is, and because I'm a West Coaster, and because I'm a former Quake player, I pay a lot of attention to this team, obviously.
Yeah.
And the improvement that I have seen from last year is really phenomenal. The Quake has been getting a little bit better every year since, you know, the 2003 or 2004, whatever that really bad season was. But this year they've made a huge jump. And, you know, the organization has the change of the structure of management had a lot to do with that. But it's just the heart of the ladies on the field, and everybody's got, you know, the right attitude and pulling the same way now. And
we had a tremendous rookie class that really just added to the distinguished veterans that we had. And, you know, a lot of people led by example this year. We didn't have a lot of vocal leadership, and a lot of people just led by example, and we really let the coaches take charge. And I was very, very, very happy with the turnout. The one thing that depresses me is that, you know, we're going to be remembered for 69-3 shellacking of the future 2008 IWSL champions. You know, it's just, so it's like, argh. And, you know,
it's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just frustrating.
But, you know, that's
what
happens when you run up against a really good team like Dallas. You know, there are people on the various message boards saying, well, this just proves that WPFL is the better league, which doesn't exist anymore. It's like, no, it just proves that the Diamonds are all that. And, I've been watching them for a while, obviously. I saw them play the Aftershock a couple of times, and I did go to one game in Dallas one time. Their fan base is really tremendous. They have a lot of really crazy, happy people in the stands, and it's fun
to
watch.
Yeah, our game, there was only 100, maybe 150 people there.
Serious? That few?
There was nobody. We had 25 people on our side, and there was nobody in their stands. I was shocked. I was sitting there.
That's
when I was
surprising.
Walking up the stands, I was counting people, and I was like, they have just over 100 people here. And I think maybe it was because it was the 3 o'clock game, and it was, you know, the seventh realm of the sun. Hot.
Right.
And it was just ridiculous. Before we get out of here, I just want to make sure that everybody knows that on Saturday, pregame at 6:30, same phone number, same WFB continues link, H-Stone, Texas Cyclones versus the LA Amazons, 6:30 pregame. Debbie Gaines is going to be calling the game. I know I'll be there watching. Boo, you'll be there. It should be an exciting game.
I may go up
game.
To the booth and help Debbie on the spotting. I don't know. That or I'll come sit with you, Coach.
Well, I know I'm going to have my phone in my pocket and be updating BJ and the rest of the crew up in the Seattle area because I want to listen to some of that play-by-play.
Excellent.
And then, you know, and then I can tell her the score and stuff like that so we keep everybody updated because, you know, that's once again spreads the word of women's football. And even if you can't make it to the game, you should be able to follow it and in turn build the sport.
Coach, the East game is played in Pittsburgh, right?
No, it's in Chicago. Chicago was the number
in
one
Chicago.
Seed.
In Chicago. I couldn't remember who it was.
Yep.
And
last week, all the home teams won. This week, I predict all the away teams will win.
It'll be interesting, huh?
Yeah,
and who's
Dallas
the...
gonna...
I'm sorry. Who's the other one in the NWFA?
To tell you the truth, I don't even know. Only one... it's Philly and Mayhem. It's the Philadelphia Phoenix and the Western Michigan Mayhem.
Oh, okay.
So, and Philly's been good for as long as I know. Remember Betty Suzuki used to play for them.
Back in the day. Well, I wonder if they still have any of the original Liberty Bells on that team. I don't know.
BJ's telling me that the Mayhem are favored to win. I'm not
and
sure
Mayhem's
what biggest line she got that from, but
I don't know. I think when you start matching up teams that, you know, don't play each other in the course of the season or don't have a lot of common opponents, you sort of get an anything-can-happen thing going on. You might have a close game. You might have a blowout. It's, you know, playoffs.
Yeah.
Win or
go
home, right?
Yes, win or go home, and guess what? I'm home. So,
I'm sorry, Coach.
It's okay. It's not like your fault. I mean, I would have been home if we would have won. We just would have been traveling to Seattle this weekend.
Right.
So, we've got a couple of minutes left in the show, and I just want to say thank you to everybody that's listening, even though nobody but Boo spoke up. I will forgive you this time.
Should be a weekly
show.
Call in. You don't want to hear me talking to Coach all the time, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say the last couple minutes of every show. This one was 20 minutes because there was only two games. Hopefully I'll be able to have more. But next week we'll go over the results of the games. I will... basically go over, try and get some coaches to call in that played last week and have some chat talk with some of the coaches and how they felt the games went. So next week, same time, same bat channel. It'll be 7 o'clock Wednesday nights because you know what? There is no football on Wednesdays, whether you're talking NFL, college, high school, or women's. There are no games, so you can't say that football got in the way unless you're at practice. And if you're at practice, that's where you should be. Don't skip practice and listen to me talk. So next week, tune in. We'll have the results of the games. My feedback on what I, because I'll probably have both of the films. I have so much film, and I watch film all the time because that's what I do. I watch football or I put in a movie. So thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight. Once again, this is 3rd and Long with Coach Penn. Wednesday nights from 7 to 8 on the WFB Continues link. Once again, pregame, 6:30, Saturday, kickoff, 7 p.m., H-Town, Texas Cyclones at the L.A. Amazons. It begins will be your play-by-play, and you heard Boo Mike come in there and be your spotter. So thanks to everybody listening. Hope everybody has a safe weekend. Teams traveling, travel safely. Everybody have a great game. I will talk to everyone next week.